Off the Ball Breakfast.
Yeah, it's an it's like the people put up the on today's office on the Monday and they're somewhere unbelievable. It's like I am literally at the corner. The player is right beside me.
You don't get that much anymore, do you?
No, you don't.
The old today's office.
Today's office, and you're sitting on the beach.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
This is Sliding Doors, a podcast offering you a view of an alternate footballing universe, looking at some of the transfer market's biggest missed opportunities. Down through the decades, newspaper pages, sports news channel broadcasts, Twitter feeds and podcasts have been filled with talk of transfers that never happened. However, this podcast will look at the proposed moves that went beyond mere rumour and tittle-tattle, transfers that almost came to pass and could well have changed the landscape of football at the time. The fanciful that was almost made flesh. Think Frank Worthington to Liverpool, Mikey Johnston to Flamengo, and Alfredo Di Stefano to Barcelona. This is Sliding Doors.
And Di Stefano back, and notice how he brings the ball under control immediately. Span is a real footballing artist.
If we're honest, some of the biggest nearly transfers of all time may ultimately have had little to no impact on the futures of their particular clubs, but the case of Di Stefano's close shave with the Catalonian Giants would have changed the face of Spanish football, European football, and perhaps beyond. The story centres around 1953, a year in which Barcelona were crowned back-to-back Spanish champions, with Real Madrid having to content themselves with another third-placed finish. Indeed, Madrid had only two championships to their name by that stage, with both coming in a pre-Franco spell in which they were forced to drop the Real from their name. Things, as you might imagine, were very, very different to the way history would define both clubs. As Sid Lowe wrote in Fear and Loathing in La Liga, without Di Stefano for Madrid, there would be no Galacticos, no packed stadium, no sense of grandeur or entitlement, and little of the success that makes them what they are. Few moves, if any, in the history of the game have gone such a long way towards defining one club while also plotting the battle lines with their biggest rival. But the genesis of that most famous of schisms begins not in Barcelona nor in Madrid, but in the El Dorado era of football in Colombia. In 1949, moves were afoot to professionalize the amateur Colombian League. 10 sides, including Millonarios, their Bogotá neighbors Independiente Santa Fe, Deportivo Cali and Independiente Medellin, were picked to compete in a new flight called the Dimayor. However, a dispute soon arose with Colombia's governing body of amateur football, ADEFUTBOL, leading to the Dimayor breaking away from the Colombian Federation and FIFA bestowing upon them rebel status. That move saw the Colombian national team suspended by FIFA during that time. Coinciding with the land grab in Colombian football was a player strike in Argentina.
There was a big problem in Argentina.
There were lots of clubs in the capital city, and obviously there wasn't enough money for everybody. Some clubs paid the players, some others didn't. So there was a demonstration organized by the first team players from the capital, and there was a general strike that lasted for 8 months.
Players, Di Stefano among them, had been vocal about a perceived lack of freedom of contract in the country. The then River Plate striker was quoted at the time as saying, "It's not right that neither we nor any professional footballer has signed their contract freely in recent times. Freedom of contract exists in Argentina for all human activities except for professional footballers." Added to that was a Ministry of Labour diktat that player salaries could not exceed 1,500 pesos a month. At that time, 86 of the 342 players already on maximum wage in Argentina had no room to manoeuvre upwards. The strike of 1948 brought the league to a halt on a number of occasions, but the unwillingness of the authorities to budge led to the championship being completed with teams fielding youth scab players. Given the standoff, several Argentine players began to cast their gaze to the free-for-all that was developing in Colombia. Freed from the shackles of conventional footballing traditions, the Dimayor clubs no longer felt compelled to pay transfer fees, instead guaranteeing players who were willing to travel to Colombia. Bogotá was the destination of choice for Argentine players seeking their fortune outside of their restrictive home. So, in June of 1949, River Plate inside forward Adolfo Pedernera became the first of the Millonarios' big money recruits, followed in August by clubmates Alfredo Di Stefano and Nestor Pipo Rossi. Decades before the cosmopolitan English Premier League and even the golden days of Serie A, Colombia's Di Mayor boasted more than 100 foreign players, hailing not only from Argentina but from Brazil, Uruguay and Peru, as well as European heavyweights like Hungary and England. Indeed, Charlie Mitten swapped Manchester United for Independiente Santa Fe, where he earned 10 times his weekly wage from Old Trafford, with a £5,000 signing bonus on top. But helped by the arrival of Di Stefano and co, it was Millonarios who dominated the breakaway league, winning first in 1949 and then for three consecutive years from 51 to 53. By the time Di Stefano had departed Colombia, he'd contributed to three of those four Millonarios titles, scoring 93 goals in 111 appearances.
The Blue Ballet, they called us in Colombia. A ball-playing machine. It was a great team, but it had seven Argentinians, something like that, Peruvians, Uruguayans, Paraguayans. They went on tour, stopping in Madrid, where we won the 50th anniversary trophy. How incredible.
Not only impressing in Colombia, a country for whom he'd play four non-FIFA sanctioned friendlies, Di Stefano was also winning influential fans over in Spain. Along with Swedish champions Norrköping, Millonarios were invited in 1952 to take part in a mini football tournament that was part of Real Madrid's Golden Jubilee celebrations. Millonarios were only there after Di Stefano's previous club River Plate withdrew from the triangular tournament. In the first game at Real's Chamartín Stadium, later to become the Bernabeu, Di Stefano scored the Bogotá club's second in a 2-2 draw with Norrköping, but it's arguably their second game against Real Madrid that can be regarded as one of the most pivotal performances in world football history. Di Stefano scored twice for El Ballet Azul as they beat their hosts by 4-2 in front of a reported crowd of 70,000 spectators.
A los 34 minutos, un magnífico pase de Baez lo aprovecha Di Stefano para marcar el segundo gol. Todo el primer tiempo se resume en una asombrosa exhibición del equipo visitante.
Describing his display, ABC wrote, Di Stefano, strong and dynamic, quickly made spectators believe they were in the presence of an incredible player with the gift of seeming ubiquitousness, with the authority to provide the best opportunities for his teammates. Real president Santiago Bernabeu made an immediate beeline to the Millonarios dressing room afterwards, and to Di Stefano in particular, indeed inviting the player and Pipo Rossi to appear with him on a popular chat show. Bernabeu later claimed he offered Millonarios $30,000 up front to sign Di Stefano, but that offer was rebuffed. If that tale was true, the Colombians' club stance was due in part to the complicated nature of Di Stefano and others who followed the Gold Rush to Colombia's registrations. Signed in 1951, the Lima Pact instructed that players who had sought their fortunes in the breakaway Colombian Di Mayor would have to return to their original clubs by 1954. Long story short, River Plate had more than a significant stake in the likes of Di Stefano, Pedernera, Rossi and others, meaning any sales to the likes of Real Madrid would be complicated. Not that that diminished the amount of suitors for Di Stefano. Another interested party at the Chamartín for Millonarios' demolition of Real was Barcelona scout Josep Samitier. The reigning Spanish champions had form in completing complicated deals, having signed Hungarian legend Laszlo Kubala. That striker had defected from his native land following the communist revolution there, initially playing in Italy and then for a team of exiles called Hungaria, who also won admirers in an exhibition of their own against Real Madrid. Given how Barca would later define themselves, it's interesting to note that Samitier used his connections with Franco's government to untangle the knot around Kubala's registration and land him a contract at Les Corts and Spanish citizenship. Now, Barcelona wanted to combine the talents of Kubala with those of Di Stefano, or perhaps replace the Hungarian, who had missed a chunk of the 1952-53 season due to a battle with tuberculosis. Whatever the intention, Barca intended to steal a march on Real, sending a party to Buenos Aires, where Di Stefano had returned, burned out by the travel involved in Millonarios' money-spinning exhibition tours and now refusing to return for the 1953 Di Mayor season.
In 1953, I went back to Buenos Aires. I was thinking about doing something else because I'd had enough of football. It was then that some Catalan football directors came to Argentina. I was painting the roof of a house, and I assume that's where the Barcelona directors got it wrong, because instead of going to Colombia, they went to see River in Buenos Aires. And that's when the story became a kind of international affair.
Now 27, Di Stefano was contemplating a sabbatical from the game, but Barcelona officials were intent on winning him over. Encouraged by his father to treat the trip like a holiday, Di Stefano took up the offer to travel to Barcelona in May of 53 to familiarise himself with the city and the club. Before the Di Stefano family landed in Spain, an offer to Barcelona from River Plate came, setting forth two possible scenarios where Barca could assume the player's registration in 1954. One was that Barca could have him on loan for 2 years by paying a million Argentine pesos, with the other to buy Di Stefano outright for 2.5 million. Barcelona countered with the offer of a one-year loan with the option to buy and some friendlies in Buenos Aires to make up the shortfall. Clearly confident that a deal would be done, Di Stefano was pictured around the city of Barcelona and with the club's famous Blaugrana shirt. But Di Stefano, as he'd later admit, was getting fed up in Barcelona. May turned to June, and then June to July, and there was still no update on just when he could commence becoming a Barcelona player. Me and Arias were angry that Di Stefano had deserted them, and they were making things as tricky as they could for Barcelona in negotiations to release the player. Di Stefano signed a statement of apology to me and Arias, which was published in Colombian publication Diario Gráfico, but on the same day, Barcelona were told that me and Arias president, Alfonso Senior, wanted $40,000 for the remaining 14 months of Di Stefano's contract with the Bogotá club. Barcelona would go no higher than $10,000, and with that, the wheels of the deal stopped turning, and into the fray stepped a 26-year-old Real Madrid director called Raimundo Saporta.
When we got to River Plate, they told us a Barcelona official had been there, and they had an option until a certain date for $10,000. I agreed a deal where they'd give us second option, in case Barcelona didn't pay by the specified date. Then the player could move to Real Madrid.
He arrived into the Di Stefano's life with a document purporting to be an agreement from me and Arias that he could join Real for $27,000. So as things stood, Barcelona had a deal with River Plate but not Mi and Arias, while Real were in bed with Mi and Arias but not River. Still following? Okay. So the natural next step? Talk of a ban of signing foreign players from the Spanish Football Federation effective of August 24th. Yes, the Spanish Sports Ministry were uneasy with the money being offered to the likes of Kubala and Di Stefano, decreeing their participation benefits in no way the prestige of Spanish sport, and contracting them nonetheless involves a more and more considerable economic commitment. That in turn led to Barcelona muddying the waters even further with a proposal that they sell the rights agreement with River Plate for Di Stefano to Juventus. While Juve were naturally keen on that idea, Mi and Arias president Alfonso Senior was being won over by Santiago Bernabeu and the top brass at Real Madrid, while Di Stefano grew uneasy with the prospect of joining Barcelona, as the man who first convinced him of the club's charms, Josep Samitier, had announced he would be leaving the club. At the same time, Real director Raimundo Saporta had developed a good relationship with Di Stefano and his family. Before Di Stefano decided on his next step, there would be one last ludicrous option put forth, this time by the Spanish FIFA executive committee member Armando Muñoz Calero. In an effort to break the impasse, Muñoz Calero suggested that Barcelona and Real Madrid share the player. Yes, that would mean Di Stefano playing out the rest of the 53-54 season with Barca, moving to Real that summer, then back to Barcelona the following summer, and so on and so forth until the deal came to a close in 1957. The Spanish Federation and the government backed that insane timeshare, with the latter suspending their proposed ban on signing foreign players just to allow the deal to happen. Barcelona's board naturally wasn't happy with that scenario, but President Martí Corretto felt compelled to agree to the sharing of Di Stefano. Both parties were compelled by General Franco's government to make their maximum efforts to consolidate the friendly sporting relations that exist between the two clubs. Embarrassed by the capitulation, Corretto resigned as club president, and in October of 53, Barcelona signed over their remaining rights to Di Stefano to Real Madrid, and reclaiming the money they paid to River Plate for the privilege. Di Stefano would make his Real Madrid debut in a friendly with French club Nancy on September 23rd of that year, scoring a header for his new club as they fell to a 4-2 defeat. 4 days later, his league debut came, scoring Real's third in a 4-2 win at home to Racing Santander. Real won 8 of their first 10 games that season, including a 5-0 demolition of Barcelona at the Chamartín, with Di Stefano scoring twice against his former would-be employers. And so, the battle lines between Spain's two powerhouse clubs were forever drawn. Barca would gain a modicum of revenge with a 5-1 win in the reverse fixture in February of 54, but 27 goals from Di Stefano helped Real win their first Primera División title in 21 years and just the third in their history.
I was lucky enough to play with a good team. In the end, we managed to win the league, and Real hadn't been champions for 21 years. Well, the blonde arrow was in town. That was me, La Saeta. And with the arrival of some others, we made up a very good team, a winning side.
Between then and Di Stefano's move to another Barcelona rival, Espanyol, in 1964, he'd helped Real Madrid win 8 league titles, a Spanish Cup, and they'd laid down a marker in the new European Cup, scoring the very first goal in the very first final, a 4-3 win over Reims in Paris in June 1956. He'd score in each final as Real won the first 5 editions of the European Cup, with a hat-trick coming his way in their iconic 7-3 defeat of Eintracht Frankfurt at Hampden Park in 1960. Barcelona would win back-to-back titles in 1959 and 1960, but just 2 more would be won by the Blaugrana. Between then and the arrival of Johan Cruyff and his dream team of the early 90s, Di Stefano's move to Real Madrid had been the wedge that opened up the chasm between the two giant Spanish clubs, and setting the course for a fractious relationship between Barcelona and Real Madrid, and indeed between the cities, that exists to this day. Di Stefano would return to a faltering Real as manager in 1982, guiding them to the 1983 Cup Winners' Cup final, where they were beaten by Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen. Di Stefano was named honorary Real Madrid president in the year 2000 and would be inextricably linked with the Castilian giants until his death in 2014. But what if the move to Barcelona had been completed? Would Real Madrid have gone on to dominate Spanish football anyway? Would the European Cup be their own personal plaything for the guts of a decade? We shall never know. If Alfredo Di Stefano had only signed for Barcelona. This has been Sliding Doors.